Hello, welcome to Pharma Marketing Talk. This is your host, Pharma Guy, also known as John Mack. And today I'm going to be speaking with Peter Kirk, who's the CEO of Sermo, and we're going to be talking about the nature and value of physician discussions on social media sites such as Sermo, and perhaps get into a little bit about how pharma can engage physicians on social media sites and online discussion boards. So let me first introduce Peter and let him tell you a couple of things about himself. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, John. Thanks for having me. We look forward to the discussion today. I'm originally, as you probably hear, I still have a slight accent from Copenhagen, Denmark, lovely little city and country, supposedly or purportedly the home of the most happiest people on earth. been a resident here in New York with my family, wife, and three young kids for the last 5 years, and have to tell you I love every day of it. And has been the CEO of Sermo for the last 3 years.
Well, great. Glad to have you over on this side of the pond, I guess, as they say. I don't think I've been in Copenhagen. I'd like to probably visit and see some of those happy people. But right now, let's talk a little bit about Sermo. I think the main interest I had was, you know, I had been talking to some other people about the value of physician discussions online. You know, Merck has Univatus, and there's Doximity. So I wanted to get your point of view from Sermo, and maybe we can start off by you telling us a little bit about Sermo and what goes on your site.
Sure. Sermo is truly a magical place for doctors. It's, you know, we pioneered social networking for doctors about a decade ago now, and today still leads as the number one social network for U.S. doctors. Sermo's really two concepts. It's a cross between a virtual doctor's lounge and a teaching university. Doctors go there because it's the number one place for them to hang out, and as you probably know, most doctor's lounges no longer exist. They're shut down by most hospital administrators. So Sermo helps fill that need, but also you can do it anytime you want, 24/7, so it's very convenient. You can really think of Sermo as a gathering place that doctors feel very comfortable with their peers, and it can really be themselves. On Sermo, you see doctors talking about anything and everything, from the business to the practice of medicine. And what really made Sermo popular, I think, has been the upheaval of the U.S. healthcare system. Doctors really needed a safe place where they could share their feelings, their true feelings, unite and be heard. So in many retrospects, we're becoming the voice of physicians. Today, Sermo has become an important place for U.S. doctors, not only to hang out, but to also collaborate medically.
Okay. Well, speaking about hanging out, this is what I was talking about with you know, your colleague Jeff Tangane of Doximity, who said that kind of implied or said outright that most of the physician discussions on Doximity were kind of mundane and not really related to medical practice. Do you find the same thing? It sounds like not.
I mean, look, Doximity has tried to get rich engagement and conversations going and has failed so far. So now he's out there saying the online physician discussions are meaningless. Now, I personally take issue with that, and I expect so does most of pharma. I mean, I respect Doximity for being a good physician reference tool. Just Doximity likes to, liken itself to LinkedIn and calls itself a medical Rolodex. I agree, there are good Rolodex and very much like LinkedIn. And here's a very important point of differentiation. You know, on LinkedIn, we are all our professional selves. We don't really engage in authentic, real discussions or share our true feelings. I mean, many doctors we've heard say, you know, the way they refer to Doximity is sort of like the stuffed shirts plot in your site. And if you really think about it, that's how most of us kind of feel about LinkedIn. We who say professionally correct things, right? I mean, you don't go in there just sort of say what you feel like today. You say, you know, what you think, what the people want to hear, what's professionally correct. And most times you say nothing at all.
It's not a place where you just say anything that comes to mind, like Facebook or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm very much guilty of that myself. I'm very conscientious of anything I put on LinkedIn. Right? So therefore, it's not necessarily very sort of my real self. And what we have to recall, you know, not just for you and I, John, but doctors are particularly conservative with respect to socializing online. They have to deal with massive liability and privacy concerns. So when they are being personally identified, like down in proximity, they are very unlikely to have, you know, real conversations and voice their true feelings about topics.
So you're a proponent of anonymous, being anonymous.
Absolutely. We did our research when I came in. I found that to be that's a real driver of engagement. So these are busy professionals who have 13-hour work days, who still then find hours and hours coming to CERMO, listening to other doctors, talking and writing with one another. On average, U.S. doctors spend over 45,000 hours on CERMO monthly, either on the, you know, on the desktop side or on mobile with us. And the way we think about it, you know, we sort of liken CERMO to Facebook, where, you know, Facebook is where true engagement happens, deep engagement, because people share their true selves, their true feelings. And, you know, doctors being able to be themselves is a cornerstone to why they choose to spend this much time on CERMO. Now, going back to your question originally, you said, you know, what are doctors discussing? And are these discussing mundane or medical? When Tagney says online physician discussions are mundane, he forgets that doctors are real people. You know, they're real people with real human needs, just like you and I have. Do doctors only talk about drugs and medicine on site? Of course not. They talk about everything and anything, right? They talk about the share the medical point of view as well as any other point of view, just like you and I do and anyone else does in the offline real world that we live in. So what we have learned is that in order for doctors to talk shop and to collaborate medically, they first need to feel safe and comfortable. So just like in a real doctor's lounge, they'll share the real thoughts, the real feelings first. Then they will talk about the tough medical case, patient case, they saw early in the day, and then they will ask each other for advice and let themselves be vulnerable. So in CERMO, most discussions are medical in nature, but discussions take all kinds of twists and turns, just like discussions do in the real world amongst trusted peers.
Let me ask you a question. If you know, the physicians are anonymous, do you get into, it used to be called flame wars on discussion boards where they might start insulting each other? Does that happen or not?
That can happen on any site, being anonymous or not, and it tends to happen more often on anonymous sites. It's something that we had to deal with. One of the things that I did not to go as CEO was to tighten up those social behavior guidelines. And we have throughout the years had to throw off a couple of physician members. But today it's not a big issue. I mean, you have to accept, you get real and honest opinions, right? So, for example, if the conversations are taking a political turn, you know, you've got people getting very passionate about Obamacare and other things on there. So that's real, but that's part of how the really doctors really feel and think. So it's important stuff to get out there. I mean, it's both important for doctors to feel comfortable, and then it's important for us and for clients to derive an insight about what is the sentiment around various medical issues. But what I would like to mention here, John, is I think a very good example is our patient cases on CERMO. We saw an increase of over 500% last year. So if anything, our medical discussions or clinical discussions are only getting, you know, increasing very, very fast. And tough patient cases posted on CERMO, we've done the math on this, gets on average over 200 years of medical practice experience crowdsourced into that one case, and all of that in less than 24 hours. And get this, at no cost to the healthcare system. So, you know, I'll say anyone, show me a system that gets on average 13 doctors from multiple specialties triaging on one patient within 24 hours. It really doesn't exist. So another way of saying it is the CERMO is a medical crowdsourcing machine, right?
Ah, okay. Okay, so what do you do with that information? I mean, for example, most of the viewers or listeners, my listeners are probably in the pharmaceutical industry, and I know that Thermo has, in the past, maybe in the present, worked with pharmaceutical companies to give them or their qualified physicians access to these conversations. I remember a long time ago there was a Pfizer had a relationship with Thermo. Can you tell us how did that work? Was it successful? What kinds of what kind of discussions do physicians on Thermo want to have with pharma? Is there a place for that?
Absolutely. And we see that's an important part, not just of our way of being a business, but also in terms of just furthering our mission, which is improving healthcare via collaborating around insights, and that very much includes industry. And so pharma were Pfizer were early adapters of social, and they helped us shape a number of commercial products, some of which are still used today, such as the guest expert post. Pfizer provided an early proof of successful partnerships that pharma can have engaging with physicians on Thermo or really any other social site like Dr. Saar, and help provide the platform that has led us to where we are today. So we are very thankful for the early partnership with Pfizer, and I hat off to them for being early adapters and leaders in social, and we still work with Pfizer today. I mean, physicians from Thermo, who are representative of the U.S. physician universe, want real, authentic discussions with industry. And the good news is, pharma's finally opening up more broadly to hearing this. As one client said to me the other day, you know, I know we can get negativity in the conversations, but I want to be part of that conversation, and I want to get ahead of them. We also did a survey not too long ago asking if our members wanted to engage with pharma, you know, online, socially, and 70% said that they want to engage with industry on relevant topics. And I think that's great news for pharma and, frankly, for you and I as healthcare consumers, because it will lead to a faster knowledge transfer with quick collaborative insights.
Obviously, pharma, like Pfizer, I guess they would have to be physicians to be part of the discussion, but they also would like to find out or tell physicians about their products. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of discussions would physicians might mention off-label uses or adverse events in these discussions that are being even monitored by pharma companies. Is that something of a concern to pharma in terms of, obviously, they might have to report these adverse events, or is it somehow by the FDA?
Sure. Adverse events is a massive concern for pharma, and you know I expect that to be true for as long as you and I are around this industry, right? And he says so. All our staff is trained on that. Presumably, most doctors already is, and certainly if pharma is sponsoring conversation, like all conversations, we have to review for adverse events, and we do that on a continued basis, whether it's a sponsored conversation or not. Back to your earlier point, you know, we can either have a guest speaker come in that is a non-physician. It's clearly identified as a non-physician. Like we can have like a therapy area expert of sorts, right? Sometimes the policy guys or payers come in. So it doesn't have to be physicians paid by pharma. It can be pharma executives themselves come in. And you know, it's very interesting for members to get very good discussions around those topics. So, I mean, and also what it really has helped is that what had been a challenge was prior to last year was that it has taken the FDA 10 years to finally come up with draft guidelines of how pharma should behave on social media sites. And now they're finally here, and when you read through all the stuff, then it pretty much basically says behave, right? But just like in the offline world, behave. Social is good for society. So industry should engage with consumers and providers alike on social platforms, just behave responsibly. So if you're influencing the conversation like you would be if you're sponsoring, if you're on there talking to an industry person, then you're responsible for the conversation. If you're not influencing the conversation, then you're not responsible for what's being said on site, even if it's your own site or partner site like Cerno. So at Cerno, we have clients engaged in a social way, as we like to call it, safe social.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm saying we help clients engage with physicians on Cerno in a safe social way, or like we nickname it,
safe social. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so do you think the recent guidelines from the FDA will make it easier for pharma companies to work with Cerno and have these kinds of discussions with physicians on Cerno?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're already feeling the impact of the guidelines being issued last year. Incoming requests to work with us have more than tripled since this time last year. We mentioned Q1 over Q1. There's still some clients, you know, they're conservative and a bit timid, but clearly it's a strong desire to learn more. And so it's really just a matter of time before social becomes part of everyday digital tactics deployed by pharma. And I don't know if you saw it, there was a recent article in MMM, but where they reported over 50% of pharma marketers are now using social media, and very importantly, 63% plan to increase their use of this tactic to reach doctors this year. That was the highest reported increase for any promotional tactic.
Right. Well, I guess they've been reading my blog lately. Well, so obviously there is some risk, but it's maybe less risk now because of the guidelines. But on the other side of the equation, what benefit do marketers or researchers from pharma gain by having these discussions on Cerno, and is to balance out any of the risks? I assume the risks are also lower because you have a more controlled environment. It's not just an open to the public discussion board, so that's even
correct.
A little bit more controlled. But what benefits do the pharma companies are able to get, and what benefits do the physicians get from this discussion with the pharmaceutical industry?
Sure. I mean, for pharma, the benefits are, you know, awareness around topics and insights. That's really the short answer for pharma. While almost all of our clients initially come to us with awareness goals in mind, many have discovered the additional value of the insights generated from the discussions around exactly the topic that they want to raise awareness for. So because of the often, like we talked about earlier, chosen anonymity by many of our members, clients get this unfiltered, honest, and authentic voice of doctors at scale, right, around issues of the whatever the discussed therapy area is. Having said that,
so
we always protect...
They can also
Sorry.
Do things like polling the physicians and sponsor polls, that kind
of
thing?
Yeah. Okay. As a matter of fact, you see more and more of the polling when they get sort of this quantitative quick answers to stuff, right? They may read a comment that's interesting. I like to check that in a quantitative way, and they can just do that on site and part of their campaign. So increasingly many of the clients working on specifically are really valuing the insights generated from the various campaigns. And we have some clients coming back thanking us, letting us know that some of the insights generated from their promotional campaign, you know, has now caused them to change tactics or messaging going forward. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Now, let me ask you this. Something that's been of interest to me concerns what's been called key opinion leaders, or there might be other terms for it, but pharma is always, I guess, looking for physicians who might be influential. Now, when you have a community, an online community like Cerno, are there physicians on Cerno who are kind of influential on Cerno itself, regardless of how influential they might be in the real world? Are these physicians valued by pharma if they're influential on a social media site like Cerno?
This is something that is a very interesting topic, and something that you know, that pharma is well, I think not just pharma, but really all of us are starting to say, well, because traditionally we always measure your KOL status very much in the offline world, right? The conferences you spoke at, the papers you your co-authored and your position inside various provider systems and whatnot. But that can be very different from an influencer online. And we're still playing around with how to best measure that. But we certainly both have traditional KOLs on site, but traditional KOL on site may not necessarily say a lot, right? So sometimes you have people who say a lot more and makes practical sense and therefore become highly respected in the online world, while there may not be a traditional recognized KOL. So that's something I think we will see evolve over the coming years, and it's not just us, but everyone in social, sort of, well, what's the best way of sort of measuring, so to speak, your medical cloud score, because that can be quite different from your offline traditional KOL score.
Right. So you're trying to score those people online, or trying to figure out how to do that, or how do you
we are still on the figuring it out path, so we haven't gone down to the actual measurement yet. So I think the traditional path is figure it out, and then we start measuring. But we're working on it and trying to figure it out. So I would like to hope that by 2016 we will be able to do that much better than just sort of, well, we feel like this guy is influential and look, he's talking a lot, and look, I got a lot of positive. So we need to get down to how do we actually measure that quantitatively, and how can you then prove it?
Right. Well, when you do figure it out, let me know. Maybe we can talk again about it.
That'll be wonderful.
Continue the conversation. Well, you know, I think we've covered a lot of what we wanted to cover. Was there something else that you might want to cover that we haven't talked about? Or something to say in closing, you know, or tell people how to contact you maybe?
I'll just say thank you for having us, John. And you are a very social guy yourself with podcasts. So, you know, for us, it's all about being social. We are thrilled to see that it does seem like farmers come more and more sort of relaxed about being part of social. I still think we've got a way to go, and it'll keep evolving for the next 5 years, but it really is becoming much more common day and less exotic compared to what it was in the early days back in, you know, 2005, 2010. So we look forward to the future.
Okay. Well, I know my kids are going to be doing a lot of stuff online, and they probably already are, so and your kids as well. Hope everybody's safe, and thank you for being a guest, and hope to meet you in person sometime.
Sounds good. Philly and New York is not so far from each other, so should be possible. But thank you, John, and have a wonderful day.
Okay, well, thank you, and I want to thank everybody for being a guest. This is Pharma Guy saying goodbye until next time. Bye, everybody.